Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. All right, presented by Breaks Plus. Chad gets the honor. Question Chad. All right, here's a good one. We were talking about how I'm fascinated by your love of reptiles. You are the leading authority in America. No joke, folks. When it comes to basically moving and shipping reptiles all around the country, I mean, you are on the short list of people in the world respected when it comes to reptiles. I find it very cool, especially after you posted a picture recently on Twitter of your green python Beyonce, who's getting ready to have babies.
She laid eggs, correct.
Mm-hmm. Got 20 of them.
16. Yep. Close.
So this question comes in from Rich, who asks, Chad, I'm not nearly as big as you, and my head is not even close to the size of Evans's, but I'm deathly afraid of snakes. What can I do to ease my fear? And I'm with Rich. I hate snakes. Snakes just...
The fear of snakes...
Freak me out, and I know I'm not alone.
The fear of snakes is taught to us.
Really?
You put a snake in front of a baby, the baby does not freak out. It's, you put a spider in front of a baby, most babies are a little freaked out by that. So there's a cultural fear of reptiles that is put upon us as kids. Obviously, there's the Bible story about the serpent. You know, so there's a very evil connotation to reptiles in general. But given the opportunity to hold a reptile in a comfortable, safe space is generally all it takes. To encounter a snake on a walk on a trail hill in Colorado even catches me off guard. You're not prepared for that. But if I were to bring you to my office, Mike, and to get you nice and calm and let you hold a snake, it's not slimy. It's not going to bite you. It's not going to eat you. You can actually experience the animal in a comfortable, safe space. That's generally is all it takes.
You're going to have a pretty big python to be able to digest my head.
It's a large squash up there.
Right?
You know that.
You know, you see when a big snake is eating and their bodies are all distended like that?
Right. There's snakes that can get over your head.
I don't know.
Probably not your shoulders, but they can get over your head. That's where they would get stuck.
I don't know. Talk about biting off more than you can chew. Snakes. I don't know.
I'm telling you, man.
I don't know.
All right. After one of these shows,
if you say it's something that is just sort of bred in us for a young age, then it was done well with me.
It's very cultural. We are taught to fear snakes here in the U.S.
The biggest snake you have ever seen in person.
20 plus feet.
How about new?
Yeah, exactly.
It's so large that it's even for me as a snake person, a 20 plus foot snake is unsettlingly large.
That's
I can understand that, because typically, you know, the snakes are smaller and I can handle them, but once you get to a certain size, you begin to recognize that I'm no longer the dominant one in this relationship.
Right.
And, you know, how long is it going to take for you to potentially view me as prey? I'm not used to being viewed as prey. I can walk anywhere. I've walked everywhere in the world, in dark alleys, late at night. I've exchanged money on the black market in some alley in Costa Rica. I've done it in Indonesia and Thailand. I've done weird things you're never supposed to do because I don't walk around being afraid in life.
Right.
I'm 6'3". I'm 250 pounds.
You're yoked.
What am I going to be afraid of?
Good point.
I could, you know, physically dominate most people. I could outrun most people. I'm not afraid of most things. A 20-foot snake, that puts things in perspective in a major way.
Wow. Texter. Chad, I have a bearded dragon. He's very aggressive. He has smashed his head so many times against the tank, He cracked the glass.
My goodness.
I have cardboard there to stop it and prevent total shattering. You might want to put concrete in there.
Bearded dragons are typically pretty mellow lizards, so I'm wondering what's going on there with that setup and your relationship with the bearded dragon.
All right. Ugh, 20-foot snake. Last one here. First time in my life I was ever starstruck. I'm about 12 years old in the pet store at Crossroads Mall, and there looking at snakes is CU linebacker Chad Brown. Took off running to tell my dad I had seen him.
Should have said, what's up, man?
You guys were rock stars at CU back in the day, huh?
Well, gosh, we were, I mean, think about how many players came from the CU program back then.
Yeah.
Just the linebackers alone, much less all the other positions. We were, you know, first round picks every year.
Yeah.
Heisman Trophy winner, Thorpe winner, Butkus winner, two Thorpe winners.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were at the tops of college football and one of the most talented programs in the sport.
Yeah. Well, I, as a teenager growing up back east, we would always get Big Eight, you know, Big Eight, Big 12 games. Mm-hmm. As the second game of the doubleheader. So I saw all kinds of, you know, your games, and, you know, I always thought, wow, Folsom Field looks so cool on TV, you know, like.
It's still pretty cool.
It's still pretty cool in person. Yes. The first time I went there, I was like, okay, I get it now. I get it. But yeah, you guys watching the Big Eight back then, it was like watching, you felt like, okay, this is like the cream of the crop in college football.
Oh, we were, no, without a doubt.
I mean,
we were the
watching,
SEC of that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oklahoma, Nebraska,
great
CU.
Great comparison.
Yeah, Oklahoma, Nebraska, CU, every year we're in the conversation for, you know, top team in the country.
Chris in Johnstown, are we going to ignore the fact about the dark alley in Costa Rica? I suppose that did kind of pique my curiosity. I don't know how much of it you're willing to share, but...
If you travel enough, the banks will give you a certain exchange rate. If you know where to go, there's places to go where you can get a better exchange rate for your money. And so we knew where to go to get the better exchange rate, but it involved dark alleys in Costa Rica, and I've done that in Thailand and in Indonesia as well. Now I recognize it's just probably smarter and safer for me just to go to a bank and do this. But, you know, you're young and... some reason, you know, getting a few more centavos or whatever the money is called in that country was so important to me. I risked life and limb to do exchanges in some dark alley.
You're wondering about that bearded dragon and why it's so amped up. Somebody sent in the text. Maybe that bearded dragon keeps banging on the wall of the case because he has poor depth perception, like Paxton Lynch. Ben? Maybe this bearded dragon $21.49.
How many days in a row?
Day number 21.49. And as we always like to say, don't stop and do the math. Don't think about it too hard.
I won't.
Okay.
How come there's no Tebow campaign?
Well, no, Tebow had a...
Sorry about that.
I mean, just because Tim Tebow ultimately proved that he wasn't an NFL quarterback and that what he did here was rather flukish.
Thank you so much. God bless y'all.
I'm not here to mock him.
Okay.
One thing I will say for Tim... See, the difference between the two is Paxton Lynch was just gifted so much that he squandered. That's why I come down hard on him.
I do see the difference.
Whereas Tebow, I think, was an overachiever.
He maximized
what
he had.
So that's really what it comes. That's the difference between the two.
Yes, blown opportunity versus seized opportunity. I see it now. That's why we can't make.
By the way, when I was coming in this morning, I don't know if you were listening at all, but
I was listening to Keyshawn. And his
Zubin and Jay Will. And yes, they were talking about the top five college quarterbacks of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had Jay, Benny, you were listening. Did he have Jameis Winston number one?
No, Matt Leinart.
Yeah, Matt Leinart number one.
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
Keyshawn did.
Keyshawn did.
USC guy made sense.
He did not have Tebow in his top five.
Did not. He said Tebow could be seven or eight, maybe nine for him.
So for you, who have you grew up, you were following that era, you played during that era, and you've had a chance to pay attention to everything subsequently. Who's your greatest ever college quarterback?
I don't know if I've got a greatest ever, but I think some of those guys that Keyshawn listed, Vince Young clearly was a unstoppable college quarterback. Matt Leinart, was at the controls of the USC dynasty when it was at its absolute height.
Yeah.
But you can't. I'm not sure what reasons Keyshawn actually has, because he was not very revealing why he didn't have Tim Tebow in there. But I don't think you can talk about great winning quarterbacks in college football and not talk about Tim Tebow. Whether you are a fan of his style or not, to deny him as a winner speaks more about you than it does about him.
Now, to me, the greatest college quarterback season I've ever seen was Joe Burrow last year.
That was off the charts.
I mean, off the charts. What he did was off the charts. And adding even more intrigue to the story was, here was somebody who had transferred, who wasn't that highly thought of. I mean, when the season began, I remember looking at a Sports Illustrated article, and this was while LSU at one point, I think it was like 5-0, 6-0 on their way to the season that they had, but they were still talking about Joe Burrow as a fifth, sixth round pick, plays himself into winning the Heisman Trophy and the number one overall pick in the draft. So to me, that was the greatest individual season ever by a college quarterback, but it was just 1 year. Does that, you seem to be a big fan of longevity. We were talking about that with the Alex English versus Nikola Jokic argument. So does,
on the professional level.
Okay, but in the college level, do you have to have done it for more than 1 year?
No.
Okay.
Because you can get 1 year and be the number one pick in the draft.
Right.
There's no reason for you to go for longevity in college football. It's time to go to the next level. Now, I think people sometimes forget this about Joe Burrow. He was a grad student. He took three hours, one class.
Yeah.
He was at the football facility with the coaches in the morning and stayed until like 8 o'clock at night.
He was a pro.
He was a pro playing college football. And some of those defensive backs that he was going against were, just taking their psych 101 exams. So I give him credit for doing what he did, but the way he went about that was far different than most quarterbacks would ever have an opportunity to do. To only take one class and essentially be a pro and show up at the facility at 6 and at least 8 at night and put in a 14-hour day at the football facility, most college quarterbacks are never going to be able to do that just from a opportunity time standpoint.
As we talk about Joe Burrow, got me thinking, maybe people are being unfair to Mac Jones. Because what is the hang-up, if there is one, with Mac Jones? Yeah, he looked great. Yeah, he did this. Yeah, he did that. Look at the numbers. Look at the winning. But he did it at Alabama. Look at all the talent around him. I don't know. Joe Burrow had the best offensive line in college football last year, including Kush at center. He had all-world talent all over the place, including Jefferson, who went on to have a tremendous rookie season at Minnesota. So Joe Burrow proved that what he did at LSU wasn't a fluke, and it translated to the NFL pretty effectively. Should we be looking at Mac Jones the same way and not holding it against him that, well, yeah, he did it all, but he did it at Alabama?
I think the biggest difference for me in that comparison is the seasons of last season with COVID versus Joe Burrow and LSU didn't have that going on. And because of the program that Alabama was, they were able to do COVID the way other teams just simply couldn't. And that made the gap between them and the other teams in the SEC that much greater than any other team that they faced. To see them whoop up on Texas A&M early in the season. I called that game for Compass Media. It was clear that Texas A&M had suffered from COVID and Alabama had not. And so that whooping they put up on them would have been a much closer game in a different year. I think that also kind of shades the way Mac Jones is viewed. But I think he's a very talented quarterback. I think he's deserving of being a first-round quarterback. But I don't think he's better than Trevor Lawrence. I think you can have arguments about the other guys, but it's so difficult to compare looking at tape of this last season because of where college football was and then absolutely where Alabama is as a program and the great players
you surrounded. But by the time you got to the end of the season and you got to the college football playoffs, weren't all those teams pretty much in regular season or at least late regular season mode by that point?
They were.
Even with everything they had gone through. I get what you're saying early on in the season, especially maybe even midway through. But by the time we got to the end of the season, that they were all kind of playing on equal footing, weren't they?
No, Ohio State had several guys out. So I don't think so. I think Alabama's certainly a dominant program. There's no doubt about that. But because of COVID, that made their dominance a step or two further than it would normally would be.
All right, so just for number purposes, Joe Burrow, adding fuel to my greatest season ever by a college quarterback, 76% completion. Completed almost 8 out of every 10 passes. 5,700 yards. 60 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. By comparison, Mac Jones, 77 complete percentage, 4,500 yards, so about 1,000 yards less, only 41 touchdowns, not 60, and 4 interceptions. So
they were calling off the dogs pretty early in a lot of their games this year. Those numbers, he could have had pretty similar to Joe Burrow numbers.
If Joe Burrow, if what he did in college shouldn't be held against him, then why should it be held against Mac Jones? Burrow is more athletic though.
Burrow's too, way more athletic.
Yeah.
It gives a whole other dimension to his game. But I mean, it's interesting because at the same time we're talking about this, no one is going to mention Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers as the greatest college quarterbacks of all time.
No.
So we're trying to extrapolate and make an argument about Joe Burrow and then Mac Jones about their potential success in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game, most of them weren't necessarily all-time great college players.
All right, so you do college football every week during the course of the season. When you're watching quarterback play in college football, how hard is it? Is it hard to be able to extrapolate whether or not what I'm watching in a college game translates to the NFL?
Oh, it's extremely difficult. Just stats become extremely misleading. If you're a team who throws the ball a lot, but you throw a lot of passes under 5 yards, those are essentially handoffs for our quarterbacks, an extension of the run game.
Mm-hmm.
The quick screens, all that kind of stuff, the bubble screens, that's a huge part of so many college offenses. That doesn't directly translate to the NFL. Your ability to go through your progressions on third down when J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones are coming on you, and they've been coming on you all game, and now it's the fourth quarter, and you've been knocked down 10 times? I don't know if there's a college situation where you can know that about a guy. The games are just so different, and the talent levels are just so different, and what we ask of quarterbacks is so different. College quarterbacks want to get the ball out of their hands quick, first read, throw it away, tuck it and run. You tuck it and run in the NFL, you're not going to live very long. We need you to be able to go through your progressions. That's not asked of college quarterbacks. They don't even do pre-snap regressions. They look to the sideline, the whole offense, and somebody holds up a card.
And that play is going to be run.
This is what we're going to do. So it's just such a different experience. So guys like Mac Jones, guys like Joe Burrow, who played in a more NFL-style offense, you know, Steve Sarkisian coordinates a very good offense. And I can't remember the offensive guru who they had in LSU who moved on after
Joe Brady.
Joe Brady, there we go. So those kind of guys incorporate NFL schemes into what they do. At the same time, they do a lot of that college stuff, too.
All right, so when this texter, Levi, says, listen, you guys try to figure out quarterbacks. It's like the guy at the roulette table trying to tell you when double zero will hit.
That's fair.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'd say to Levi is, if I got a guy sitting across from me who played in the NFL for a decade and a half, defensively, made it his habit, his job, to study offense and quarterbacks throughout his entire career and still does it post-career, is telling you it's hard to figure out what translate, then who am I? Who are you, Levi, to say this is what works? I guess.
But Levi, his opinion is valid.
But is there something, as we get into the draft and the build-up to the draft, And people out there, they're good football fans. They're fans. They want to feel informed, and they want to take a look at quarterbacks, and they want to figure out if Zach Wilson's all that, or if Justin Fields or Trey Lance, on the limited amount of exposure that they've had. What do you look for? Honestly, what can you look for to try to figure out whether or not this guy has it or not?
I think you want to come up with your ideal NFL quarterback and see if that guy can check as many comparables on that list down. Obviously, size, athletic ability, arm strength, accuracy, ability to see the field, smarts as far as diagnosing the X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
Smarts because he's going to be the face of your franchise in dealing with people.
Right.
Smarts within the locker room and knowing how to lead a locker room. You can win a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer because of the smarts end, whereas some of the more quarterback end was lacking.
Mm-hmm.
You can also have a guy who's checking off all the physical parts, Jay Cutler, but is lacking on the other end. So you need as many on that list to be able to be checked off to give yourself best chance for success.
See, the only thing I feel like I can, as just a football fan, can look at is try to find as many examples of tight window throws that you can, that this guy that you're looking at attempted, and how did he look when he was trying to make those tight window throws? Because in the NFL, they're all tight windows. In college, the vast majority of them, the guy's wide open. There he is. Throw to him. He's open. That, you know, so it's, to me, it's try to find examples of those tight window throws and how does he do on those tight window throws. And secondly, try to find examples of, okay, I can see he's literally going through his progressions during this play. And what does he do with it? Other than that, I don't know what he's like in the meeting room. I don't know what he's like on the you know, whiteboard going through and diagnosing plays. I don't know how deep into the playbook they can go. So when it comes to just me being able to try to look at these quarterbacks, those are the only two things I can really. And yeah, arm strength. I mean, those are the kind of things anybody can see. But really, those are the only two things I can really look at to try to figure out if he can play in the NFL.
Yeah, I had long conversations with the guys at Pro Football Focus about tight window throws and how they see that as such an important leading stat. And I was like, yeah, but the game is played beyond stats, guys.
Right.
You know, again, the greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady. You know, I'm not sure what his tight window throw stats were, but he was freaking co-starter at Michigan. Sixth round pick. You just don't know. There's no guarantees in this, particularly at the quarterback position.
Coming up, we're ready to duke it out. We've agreed. We don't agree. We've agreed. We're going to fight over this, and we're going to declare a winner. Next. Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
Chad Brown in for Stink. All right, let's get into this.
Let's do this.
I love these kind of debates. So,
the morning after Nikola Jokic becomes only the second center ever to reach 50 career triple doubles, joining Wilt Chamberlain, who had 78. Nikola Jokic, only 26 years old in his sixth season, is going to one day hold the record. He's also just the ninth player in history to record 50 triple-doubles, and only Magic Johnson and Oscar Robertson did it faster than him. So I'm going to use all of those numbers to plant my flag, Chad Brown, that I believe I'm watching the greatest nugget of them all. You still want to throw Carmelo Anthony and especially Alex English into the debate. Let's roll up our sleeves and get out of here.
Okay. Who goes first?
Go ahead. You're the guest.
I will concede to you that he is on the trajectory, on the path to being the greatest nugget ever. But as a sports fan, I value longevity. And as Troy Rank put it just a few minutes ago, give me another year or two, and then it's a done deal. I think he's already top three. He's already passed guys like Fat Lever, Dan Issel, David Thompson, Dikembe Mutombo. So now we're just talking about Alex English, Carmelo Anthony, and the Joker. And all the Joker needs to do to move into number two or number one for me is just do it for another year or two. So I don't think this is going to be as much of a fight as you were anticipating. It's just when you're looking at all the different factors of it all, how good of a player is he? How much does he help his teammates? For me, a big factor is always going to be longevity and doing that over a long period of time.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the only place where you and I differ.
Okay. To me, it comes down to either Jokic or English. Melo, step aside. And the biggest problem here for Melo is that this bugs me too, because as a Syracuse guy, I loved Melo. The year he was at the Cuse and led him to a national championship, that guy was just a great basketball player. He wasn't consumed with scoring. He did whatever was necessary. He could beat you one night with his scoring, the next night with his rebounding, the next night with his passing. Yes, Carmelo Anthony was a good passer for his one year in college. Then he got to the NBA, and I don't know, somebody convinced him it's about scoring points and going to all-star games and building your brand. And
isn't it?
I guess, not for Nikola Jokic. I mean, this guy is as unselfish as they come. Triple doubles mean you get 10 assists in a game.
But isn't it was sarcasm, by the way.
I know. So Melo's out of it. So it comes down to English and the Joker. And here's the thing, and I'm not doing this to demean Alex English, please. But we're talking about the greatest of all time for a franchise, so we got to start to kind of pick it apart.
Right.
Do you know that the 1982, 83, and 84 Nuggets are among three of the six highest scoring NBA teams in one season of all time? The 82 Nuggets are the number one scoring team of all time. The 84 Nuggets are fifth. The 83 Nuggets are sixth. So three of the top six highest scoring teams in NBA history are the Denver Nuggets that Alex English played on. It was the 80s. Man, it was wild. I mean, there was no defense played. It was 150 to 148. It was 176 to 173 for one Nuggets game that they played in. It was, the numbers were, it was steroids. It was, they were incomprehensible. It's like what we're seeing in the NFL right now. It's when Barry Bonds was and Mark McGwire were hitting bombs. I mean, it's you got to look at the numbers differently. And what Jokic is doing, I mean, he's averaging 28 points per game this year. Now, NBA scoring is up from where it was several years ago, but still nowhere near the level of what it was like in the 80s. So that's why I think you have to look at Alex English's numbers differently. And to me, it's what further pushes Jokic ahead. You want to concede?
I do not concede. I will say that it's not Alex English's fault that he was born when he was born. He played in the NBA when that was a style of play.
Of course, of course. But
to maximize and become the scorer that he was in the midst of that, that's not his fault. Nor should his numbers be dismissed.
Not dismissed, but you have to look at him a little closer.
Understood is one thing, but I just want to make sure we're not dismissing the numbers. Oh, because that was the NBA, no. Then they scored a lot of points.
Somebody had to score more than somebody else.
Right.
Yeah, and he did.
Yes.
Yeah.
For 11 seasons, yep. 836 games. 836 games. That's the mark for me that puts him over the top. That's... You know, the Joker, there's no argument about the talent, the unique skill set for the position, but I need to see another couple hundred more games before I can go, all right, man.
Yeah, but
it's you.
But you do understand. Assuming
the trajectory
good health, knock
is
on
clear.
Wood, that the only thing is just tacking on another couple hundred games.
And this is the NBA. It's not the NFL. Chances are the chances are so remotely small of some injury that would knock him away from being the player that we all see him to be, at least in a sustainable way into the future.
Well, that's the other thing, too, about him. His game should wear well for a long time.
Because it's a cerebral game. It's not
based on athleticism.
No, he's not AI trying to beat you off the dribble.
Right.
Right.
You know, he's not, you know, look at that explosive first step.
No.
I mean, right. It's not like that. So his is a game that should age very well for at least another decade.
Yeah. So I will concede that you and I will be on the same page in a couple years, but I can only deal with what is in front of me right now. What I can see right now, he's not there just yet.
But all you're saying is the trajectory is already there. It's just a matter of tacking on a little bit more longevity.
It feels inevitable.
Then it is inevitable, which means I win.
Because
what you're acknowledging is inevitable.
Because this is your show?
Oh, no. It doesn't work that way.
I will give you the W.
No, I don't.
I'm a guest.
Nope.
I'm a guest in your house.
Nope. I want you to scrap. If you feel you're right, you have every right to come in here and say you're right. But in this case, since we're talking about the Nuggets, I think you should take your L on the way out.
Take the L with you, homeboy.
Take that L with you. And you know who said that first? That was Michael Malone. You know the story behind this, right?
No.
There's just something about saying Michael Malone.
Yes.
That just got us thinking about how...
Mike McDonald.
It just flows like Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
Michael Malone flows like Michael McDonald. And so whenever we say Michael Malone, instantly Benny cues the music.
I love it. I keep forgetting we're not in love anymore. Classic.
All right. Good stuff. We'll get back to some more of your texts, including what Chad believes the Broncos should do with Von Miller. It's kind of interesting. It's an interesting take, and I'll give him credit, because while I just won this one, you did win me over. You did convince me of something.
It only took like two lines.
I know.
I didn't even finish my explanation that I had already won.
It was pretty easy, and you'll hear how he did it next. Falsely accused, I believe.
Of having a big head? No, it's true.
No, that's true. That's true. But being a wedge driver, sometimes being a negative Nancy, right? You know, why don't you look at the bright side of things more? So... Raj Sharon, our program director, just came in. He goes, guys, I was listening to your Jokic debate. You know, who's the greatest nugget of all time?
I think he said fantastic, witty, intelligent, and entertaining Jokic debate.
All of those things.
Yes.
But then he added this. Completely blindsided me. Could not believe the negativity. The dark cloud. He said, what happens if Jokic forces his way out of Denver like Melo did? How will that change the argument? I'm like, what? Where did that come from? Mr. Debbie Downer. He's like, well, you know, he's only got 2 years left on his deal. What if he's not happy with the direction of the franchise? What if he decides, hey, let me go team up with Luka and Porzingis in Dallas and we'll create our new Euro super team?
Come on, Raj.
Wow. Even I didn't see that coming.
He just had his 50th triple-double. We're celebrating the moment.
Yeah.
And you just want to get your little pin on and pop the balloon of fun.
Oh, I would say so.
But to answer the question, Mike, what do you think? He forces his way out after.
Boy, Nikola Jokic just doesn't strike me as a force his way out type of guy. Now, he's only got 2 years left on his deal,
mm-hmm.
and then he'll be an unrestricted free agent. So I could see him playing out his deal and then saying, what are my options? At age, 27, 28. But force his way out. Man, he doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. Does he strike you as that kind of guy?
No, he doesn't. But with the NBA, the power is in the players' hands. And if you are an organization who's unwilling to, coddle may not be the right word, but respect your superstar and give him pieces that he thinks are necessary to win a championship, then I don't think you need to be branded a bad guy if your organization is willing to rob you of your best years and not give you the pieces that you need to be successful. So I wouldn't be able to argue that he's a bad guy. He's one of the best players in the game. We're talking about him as a all-time nugget after just six seasons. At the same time, there's an expectation for the organization to help him out. And Raj brought up another good point. The payroll went down this year from last year.
It did. Let some key guys go.
What are we doing here, fellas? We trying to win a championship? We going after a cup or what?
Yeah. All right. Man. Well, that conversation just... Man, it takes a lot to bring me down in a conversation like this. Wow, I can't believe how negative that got. Very rarely hear me say that. All right, you won me over very quickly with the game plan for Von Miller. Why don't you sum it up again?
Well, so Von's due his $7 million option on March 17th.
It's an $18 million option, $7 million of which would be guaranteed.
Right, yeah. Sorry. So considering all that we don't know about Von, health, legal status, things like that, I think the best move is to keep your options open and to pay that $7 million. That way you can choose to trade him later for the teams that lost out on the J.J. Watt sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. That gives you a chance to convince Von to, hey, we'd love to have you here. This is our plan going forward for you, but we're going to need you to take some of the risk and do some incentive-laden things in your contract. But if you don't pick up that $7 million option, then there are no more options. Von's gone.
Right.
This allows you to retain him possibly as a player, but more importantly, as trade bait. To give up $7 million in cap space in a year where the Broncos have lots of cap space for the draft capital you could get back, I think most general managers would be willing to make that trade.
Okay, so if you take the teams that were in it right to the end with J.J. Watt, and the two that were mentioned most prominently are Indy and Cleveland. So if they really like J.J. Watt, if they like, and I know this is radio, but if they like Watt up here, Where does Von come in? on that sliding scale?
I think Vaughn's a notch or two or below because there's so many unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
J.J. Watt certainly has had some injuries, but he played last year and, you know, played pretty good. J.J. Watt is a leader in the locker room. He's a leader in the community. He's a leader within the organization. He's one of those guys. So there's less question marks about J.J. Watt than there are about Von Miller. So I think that brings Von a notch or two below where J.J. Watt was viewed. Because we don't know how that ankle is going to heal.
Right.
And for a pass rusher who doesn't rely on his size, he relies on his mobility, that's a significant question
mark. What do you think Von would fetch in a trade? Not a one.
Not a one.
No.
No, definitely not a
stop,
one.
Stop with that.
I don't know.
Two and a four, maybe?
Two and a four. Okay, if you're telling me that you think you can get a two and a four for Vaughn, then absolutely you pick up the option. Absolutely.
I think you do.
But with the idea that you're going to try to trade him. Because I look at it, I don't...
You don't want Vaughn back.
Nope.
And that's because of Vaughn or because of where this
team is at right now. It's where the team is at right now. This is a team that has some building to do. Even if they get a quarterback, I don't think that this is a team that's ready to contend right away. The next great Bronco team will not have Vaughn Miller on it. So, to me, it's, well, you spent 3 years in New England. What was their adage? Rather move on from a player too early than too late. Especially when you're talking about a 32-year-old pass rusher whose game is based on explosiveness, who's coming off a season-ending foot injury. And then add in, the kind of money that you'd have to pay for him. I would just rather use that ability to improve my football team to bring in younger players that I think will be part of the next great Bronco team. And I just don't think Vaughn will. Look, and this is not a knock on Vaughn. Maybe the greatest Bronco, other than Seven, the greatest Bronco ever, maybe. You know, sure. See, Vaughn, good luck. Go somewhere else. Go chase another ring. Go be DeMarcus Ware to somebody else's young Vaughn Miller somewhere else. Maybe it's Cleveland, Miles Garrett, who knows. And we'll see at the Ring of Fame ceremony here down the road. And we'll certainly see in Canton.
There's something to be said organizationally for allowing or allow. If you're all business all the time, sometimes it's difficult to promote loyalty in the midst of that. So if you go your route,
and
which is a more clearly business-focused route.
Yep.
That has a ripple effect in the locker room.
And you, how you stop that? You sign Justin Simmons. Because then Justin Simmons becomes your new poster child for this is how you do it, Broncos, young Broncos. You get drafted in the mid rounds. You come in. You do everything right. You improve. You play. You perform. You're a great locker room guy. You're a great community guy. You're a Walter Payton nominee. You do all that stuff, and look what happens. You get paid. You get rewarded. You do that with Justin Simmons, nobody's going to be upset about the way you handled Vaughn Miller at the end.
He's the Super Bowl MVP. You just kick him out the door. You can put him out the stud and let him just rush the quarterback for a couple more years. That certainly is possible.
This is not one of your albino snakes, okay? This isn't Beyonce or Kelly or TLC, okay? This is the business of the NFL. And admit it, you were in the NFL probably 5 minutes when you looked around and realized, this is a business.
Nope, it was after year three when they released Rod Woodson. I thought, man, released Rod Woodson.
Right?
I'm coming up next for sure.
And that's Pittsburgh.
Right, where
one
they
of
had
the most loyal franchises of them all.
In Three River Stadium, there were signs that said, Rod is God.
Right.
They released God?
Yeah.
They're definitely going to let me go.
So, you know, not going to be held against you.
Right, right.
Now, I think if you don't work out a deal with Simmons, that's I think, where you get that ripple effect you're talking about.
I'm with you.
All right, good stuff, Chad.
Yep.
Hey, really appreciate it. You're going to be back in again tomorrow for Stink.
Yes.
Look forward to that. Get a good night's sleep. The grind of the morning start to catch up a little bit. Listen,
ready.
You 8 a.m.ers may be not realizing this. You just got up maybe about, 30 minutes ago. Rolling in here at 5:30. Here comes Sandy Clough. He's nodding his head. He remembers those days. He knows those days. All right, we'll see Chad back here again tomorrow morning. Right now, we'll listen to Sandy and the Big O coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.